Hello, and welcome to the CredoCast. I'm John Doherty, the founder and CEO of digital marketing marketplace Credo, where I connect you with the best digital marketing agencies and consultants available online. I started Credo at the beginning of 2013 because I saw a need. Large companies with big budgets have an easy time finding a great agency, but I saw that small businesses had an incredibly hard time. There are many misleading messages about what it takes to grow your business online these days, and small businesses have been hurt by bad agencies before. I've even seen it happen to my own friends. This podcast series digs into the beginning stories of Credo pros and other select entrepreneurs in the digital marketing space. Whether you're just starting a business or you've been in business for years, these stories are meant to encourage, energize, and inspire you to take the next step in your career, whatever that is. So sit back, listen, and enjoy the conversation.
Cool.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the next episode of the CredoCast. Today, I have with me Mike Arneson of Upbuild, which is a search marketing agency, technical search marketing agency based in Portland, Oregon. Mike and I have been connected through the digital marketing industry for quite a while now. Back in the day, he and I both had sweet ponytails. I cut mine off. I believe he still has his, but Mike is a whip smart marketer. He's a great speaker. He's speaking at MozCon this year, and I've seen him speak at a number of other conferences over the years. And he's been building Upbuild for the last, I think, about 2 years now. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, John. It's awesome to be here.
Great to have you. So, why don't you give us the background of Upbuild? Why did you start it? How did you know that it was time to go from being an employee to actually starting to build something of your own?
This is going to be a fun one. Long story, so I'll try to keep it as short as possible. But actually, first and foremost, I actually did cut my hair. One thing I think you learn pretty quickly as a I cut my hair off about, I don't know, almost 10 months ago.
Wow, I actually haven't seen you in way too long.
Yeah, totally. And I'll tell you the thing that I learned pretty quickly as a solo entrepreneur is like efficiency is super important. And you learn that pretty quickly. And I was like, you know what? I spend maybe half an hour maintaining this thing on my head. And let me just cut that. Like, that's an easy choice to make in terms of my daily routine. It's like, I'd rather be focusing on how I can make my business sustainable and grow. So decided it was time.
I got it. So I just want to jump in here real quick and ask one more question. As a former long-haired man myself, now with short hair, and actually getting a haircut this afternoon, which you don't really do that much when you have long hair. You shower more or less now?
You know what? It depends week to week. Sometimes it's a little more if it's in summer, and I don't have to worry about like what do I do with the hair afterward, which is great. And sometimes, like, you know, if it's a couple busy days, I don't have to worry about it.
I love it. All right. Well, now that we have the hygiene portion out of the way, tell us the story about Build.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the reason or the occasion when I knew it was time was pretty much when I was asked to leave my last job. And I think in general, like now that I'm reflecting on my time being an employee, like some of the greatest favors that employers can give us is like give us a good sense of confidence and then push us into something that's totally uncomfortable and new. And whether that's done intentionally or it's just something that happens, you know, it's up for debate. It could be either or. So throughout my time at my last company, I'd been there for about 5 years. I started literally as like the lowest of the low junior level SEO guys. And what I actually did on my first day was I was 8 hours of reading blog posts and highlighting the words that I thought should link to other pages on the site. I didn't have the trust to actually put the links in the page, but I would highlight them and tell them, okay, here's some words that you can highlight. So that's what I did. And, you know, fast forward, I became the director of that agency after about 5 years. We got to a spot where we were an attractive acquisition target for a much larger company based down in New York. They came in and they said they wanted to offer analytics and search marketing services, so they bought us up rather than do their own thing in-house. Sounded like it was going to be a pretty sweet deal when it happened. And, you know, without getting too much into the details, about a year after the close of the sale, it became pretty apparent that just it was not going to be the place for me. It was not what I was trying to build in my life. It's not really what I wanted, what I was passionate about. And I think, you know, there it's a plausible reality that some people would really thrive in that environment. Like, they want to be something, part of something much bigger than themselves, not just in, you know, the philosophical way, but like, they want to be part of a multi-layered bureaucracy and be able to get lost in an organization. That's actually a totally fine thing to want. But for someone who's like obsessed with, and for lack of a better word, obsessed with controlling your destiny, it's not a good place that is going to work out long term, or even short term for that matter. So I kind of had expressed my hesitancy about, you know, diving into the post-acquisition world. And pretty much I never even filed or submitted any kind of formal resignation. But next day after bringing that up, kind of in conversation, there was someone who had flown in from New York to tell me to pack my things, and I had an hour to upload anything I wanted to Dropbox to get it off the company computer. So that was a cool moment, now looking back on it, in that it made a decision for me and said, okay, now you have the whole world in front of you, and you can choose whatever you want to do. You know, it's a huge, very, very high stakes, choose your own adventure book. And it honestly took me a while to be comfortable with the idea of doing something on my own. And for a bit, I was, you know, contemplating going in-house. I've actually never been an in-house SEO or in-house marketer of any sort. And what I knew was the agency world. And I knew there were actually plenty of opportunities here in Portland, Oregon, where I could like rehash the same thing and come into a mid-stage search marketing agency and repeat the process, make them really profitable, continue to advance my own personal reputation, brand. And that was kind of appealing. But this other thing in the back of my head was like, well, what if I did this on my own? And after about 3 weeks of soul searching and kind of talking to other people who had done similar things, kind of made similar leaps, I decided, okay, I'm going to give 100% to this for 3 months and see how it goes.
Wow, that's a fantastic starting story. I love hearing that. I've talked to three or four other agency owners by this point, and every single one of you has been laid off and started your agency after you got laid off. And I also got laid off about a year ago and started doing my own thing right after that. So there's something in the digital marketing entrepreneur waters that makes us all get laid off and then decide to do our own thing.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. That's fantastic to hear. So you said you took those 3 weeks and kind of did some soul searching. So it sounds like you weren't, it's not like you were told to pack up your things, had that hour and uploaded some documents, and then, you know, you were out. Sounds like you weren't like, okay, I'm going to go, you know, the next day hitting the ground running. You were like, you're kind of trying to decide what you're going to do. So what was the catalyst for making you say that you're going to give it 3 months, and how did you get your first clients?
Yeah, that's great. I think the catalyst to helping me decide that like, this is the path I wanted to choose. And for reference, like during those 3 weeks, it was like, could have been considered a dark time. It wasn't necessarily dark, but it was just full of so much uncertainty and anxiety around like, okay, I have a mortgage, I have a wife, how am I going to keep providing for these things and still take the time to like make what I am going to ultimately feel is the right decision. So I had actually changed the background of my cell phone to have a little cartoon character, and it just had a guy in his underwear pulling up his pants, and it said, objective one, put on pants. And so I decided if I got up every morning and put on actual pants and changed out of my whatever I was sleeping in, that was a success that day. And I was going to say, okay, that's cool for 3 weeks. I can do that. So at the end of that, what really ended up making the decision for me was this quote, a modified quote that I wrote on my whiteboard in my home office. And this was actually the quote is used in one of my favorite hardcore punk rock songs. And people who know me have been following me kind of know like that's my shtick in SEO is like punk rock SEO. I didn't realize until years and years later that it's actually a quote they borrowed from a Bob Marley song, but it's called, love the life that you live the life that you love. And when I had started trying to figure out this, my whole destiny, I wrote on my whiteboard, build the life that you live and love the life that you build. And so that's kind of what I was contemplating when I made the decision. And it really boiled down to, I do not think it's possible for me to build the life that I want by doing anything other than this. You know, and it's actually, I was a history major way back in the day. And the one thing that we kind of learn studying revolutions and insurgencies and stuff like that is things never really change when conditions are at their worst. They change when things start to get a little better. And at the company I was at previously, I had had this wonderful opportunity to start really impacting the culture and implementing a lot of cool things that I would want to see in my ideal workplace. And it was like, kind of starting to look like, hey, one day that could be something that is a reality. But then, of course, things changed pretty rapidly. But seeing a taste of that or getting a taste of that made me realize that, like, only when I'm in the captain's seat am I going to be able to steer the ship toward what I want ultimately. So that's kind of what made the ultimate decision for me, was really evaluating it, taking a hard look at what I wanted to build if I'm going to spend the next 5 years doing something. Like, let's make it an investment in something that I want to be a part of and I want to reflect my life moving forward. So that's what made it for me.
So that's where Upbuild comes from.
That is where Upbuild comes from, yeah.
Wow, love it. I think it's super important for all entrepreneurs to have quotes that they live by. One of mine, as I'm building Credo, as I'm building my consultancy as well, doing some consulting on the side, is losers have goals, winners have systems. So yeah. That every day I actually have that on the top of my to-do list. I use Trello on top of my like to-do today list, and it keeps me focused on the long term and not saying, you know, I'm trying to build a $1 million company. You know, but really what I'm doing is I'm trying to set in place processes that keep working and I don't have to keep going back and redoing things. So that's really cool. Really cool to hear. So at what point did you know that it was going, that it was going to work? I mean, you had 3 weeks and you put on pants every day, which is a great goal. And, you know, and so presumably in there, like after those 3 weeks, you decided to go all in, then you got your first client. And then when did you know that really this was going to work and you weren't, you know, going to have to go back? Did it take a full 3 months?
I will admit that I really didn't know it was going to work until like 10 months in. And really the landmark thing that really made it clear in my mind that like, oh yeah, this is actually something, was actually after we had had employees on payroll for a little bit. That's when I was like, holy shit, this is actually real. This is a thing. Because before, and we can talk about this more if you like, but like I'm eternally grateful to the people who joined the Upbuild team in year one, because I was like, basically, hey guys, would you like to come join my team? Like, we don't have benefits. You're not going to get a regular paycheck because I have to treat you as a 1099 because I don't know how to do payroll. And just hang on and hopefully it's going to go well. So that was awesome that I had that trust and found people that were really into what I was doing and wanted to be part of Upbuild. So that was phenomenal. And but unfortunately, even that wasn't like enough for my internal thought process to be like, oh yeah, you have something here. It was after we had been on payroll and payroll had come out twice that I was like, you know what? This is a thing. And the business didn't collapse when I made people official employees. And like, I think this is going to actually be something that I do for a long time.
Wow. Okay. So how did you learn? I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. How did you, tell me about figuring out payroll. One of the hardest things about starting a company is all these just admin things like payroll and maybe benefits or, setting up business bank accounts and what can I charge and what can I not? And, you know, quarterly taxes and whatever. So tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the time that I've been doing this, I've kind of learned that this is not an uncommon thing. But like starting out, I was like, you know what? I'm the dog sitting at the desk in front of the computer with like the I have no idea what I'm doing caption. Like that was me every day.
I still feel that way.
Yeah. And I think we kind of do for a while. People who have been in business for, you know, four times as long as I have at this point are like, yep, we still feel like that. Getting into this was a total crash course in like, oh, business. As I mentioned before, like I got my degree in history. So like I have no background actually in marketing or business management. My dad is a CPA. So that was kind of like a constant thing. Like maybe my son could get into accounting or like a real like applicable degree. And I was like, no, I want to read history books. And then I got into this SEO thing, which is like a made up profession, to an outsider.
So and he was probably also like, yeah. Maybe now that my son got laid off, he can cut his hair and get a job as a CPA.
Yeah, exactly. go back to school, take that accounting class.
Totally.
But actually, I mean, that did come come to be a very valuable asset in terms of having, you know, a CPA as my father has been super helpful in making sure, like, I'm aware of taxes and how that works and filing quarterly and all that good stuff, which debatable whether or not I would have figured that on my own. But in terms of, like, the payroll aspect, I mean, the big thing that really saved my skin was, I mean, because Upbuild is our kind of vision is, like, we want to get the best search marketing talent in the country, perhaps potentially one day the world. And we don't want to be limited by geography. But then, of course, like, that comes with, like, oh, great, we just hired somebody in Oklahoma City. How do I deal with those taxes? And do I figure out what that is different than, you know, Los Angeles and Portland, Oregon and Denver, Colorado? We have people in all those places. So I actually use a service called JustWorks that helps automate the process of, you know, payroll and HR stuff. And so everybody's actually in their that's software as a service, essentially. And everybody goes into that platform. It automatically files their taxes to their local state and then files our federal taxes for employment stuff. And then, even helps them with onboarding and 1099s for contractors as well, get sent out through that system. So maybe a little more expensive than if I, like, had somebody I trusted doing it and I was paying them an hourly rate. But, like, for the peace of mind and just, like, not having to think about it, worthwhile investment for me.
Totally. I've heard great things about JustWorks and actually checked it out myself for, you know, 1099s and that sort of thing. I use a company called Bench. Actually, I think you use Bench as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I started looking into them, yeah.
A lot of that. Keeps a lot of that straight for me. So, but I hear great things about JustWorks, and someday when I do payroll, I'll definitely look into that.
Awesome.
Very cool. So I guess the next question I have for you, so you got started off and you got your first client, and then 10-ish months in, you had run payroll a couple times and you had some employees. What would you have done looking back now? And you've been going for what, 2 years now?
About a year and a half.
Year and a half. Okay, so not even 2 years yet. In those, looking back over those 18 months, what would you have done differently by this point? What do you wish that you had known that would have changed some of the things that you've done?
Yeah, I think everybody listening would probably say this at some point. Nobody ever says, like, I wish I hadn't delegated as soon as I did. I mean, some people will. But I mean, I wish I would have learned to delegate, to be comfortable with delegating tasks to some of the team or even, you know, virtual assistants kind of stuff to really keep me focused on what is going to provide lasting value to the business and facilitate growth. That's something that I almost kind of a no-brainer. But actually, the big thing that I would do differently is identify early on what my list of non-negotiables were in terms of client contracts. Basically, what I identified over these past, you know, 18 months or so is when I bent over backwards for specific clients to, like, you know what, compete on price, fit into what they preferred for, you know, vendor payment terms, whether that's, you know, net 30, net 90, net 180, any kind of that stuff. When I made concessions on some of the important stuff like that, which was really, like, what I come to the table with is what I think I can get away with and not be a hard ass to these clients, while still being able to run a sane business where we're not, you know, constantly, like, watching cash flow and making and looking at, like, payroll coming up and be like, I wonder if we're going to be able to pay that this month. So we kind of put these things in place, and I noticed that whenever I compromised too much on those, it was always a bad fit. Like, it never, the rest of the engagement never went well when you started on that footing. So that's something that I would do a little differently, is identify, like, okay, here's the most we're willing to compete on price. Like, maybe that's, you know, we'll wiggle within 5% of what we bid you. Or we'll, like, actually, you had a fantastic video about competing on scope and, you know, anchoring when you're talking to clients and saying, you know, we can reduce the scope of the project and reduce, like, the total hours, but we're not going to give you, like, a cheaper hourly rate and work for peanuts just to get your business. It's not that important. So I wish I would have learned that sooner.
Totally. So tell me how that ties back to your whole ethos in business and wanting to, you know, love the thing that you build, the thing that you love, and love the thing that you build. How does that, you know, not negotiating on, you know, on price, you know, and all that tie back into that? And how has that helped you move forward in your business?
Yeah. So really, I think the way that it ties back is, and if you go and take a look at like Upbuild's core values that we have on our website, like it's all very selfish stuff for like what I wanted to build, which I don't have a problem with because I've been fortunate enough to kind of attract people that share those same values. And so one of our big things is like pride and wanting to be proud of the work that we do for our clients, proud of that quality, proud of the actual clients themselves who we're working with. We think they're actually doing something cool, something meaningful, something progressive. So we kind of really take our time to find right fit clients and, you know, having those non-negotiables like, you know, payment terms or haggling on price, it typically reflects that like either they're going to be a client we can feel good about or like, you know, we should have known from the beginning they weren't going to be a client we'd be super stoked to wake up every Monday and start working on. And another thing is like this concept of betterment is one of our leading core values. And it's like, okay, this is something that I started when it was just me as Upbuild, was like, I wanted to say each morning, what am I doing today to make my clients' lives or jobs better and easier? So, and then the same applies to like, you know, people on Google search, like what are we doing to make their day, even if it's in this minuscule way and we're saving them half a minute by giving them a better result and connecting them with the information they need faster. What can we do today to make someone's life better? And so asking that kind of stuff really aligns with, you know, identifying poor fit clients up front, because usually what it always meant when we had someone who started a relationship that way is like they were just going to be almost impossible to please. And even when we bent over backwards or went the extra mile for them to do something that we thought was really meaningful, that we were really proud of, it was just never enough. And I think there's also, you know, in some organizations, that's like the attitude of like, here's how you work your vendors. Like you never tell them you're grateful and you always ask for more, which is fine to a degree. But at the same time, like if you want a healthy, productive working relationship where people are motivated to do great work for you, maybe not the best thing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. And I've definitely had clients that have tried to do that right and try to get, you know, try to, I guess, milk you for, you know, all the information, you know, that you have, or, you know, keep asking for more things when you've told them you'll do like one round of, you know, updates or comments on something, then they keep asking for other things. And, you know, and then you as the business owner have to go back and say like, hey, that's not within scope. You know, I'm happy to talk about what that would cost, but, you know, that's going to take, you know, another 20 hours or something like that. And so, you know, we can discuss that if you would like to. And that's part of, you know, I firmly believe that building the life you want means that you have to, you know, step up and, well, A, you have to know what life you want. And then B, that allows you to say like yes and no to specific things, or push back and say like, that is not going to lead to, you know, this future, you know, future happiness or even my current happiness, right? And as an entrepreneur, you know, yourself, like you have a whole team, to look out for. And so having those values and being driven in that way really is what is going to drive your business forward, is going to keep your people happy internally as well.
Absolutely.
Cool. And also leading into the last question I have for you, building your own thing is a great way to do that as well, because then you're not having someone tell you to, oh, well just go and do this thing, 'cause it's the way we've always done it, but you can actually drive it forward and build towards that every single day. So in the vein of building your own thing, you said that you had thought about going in-house at this point, 18 months in, have a number of employees around the country, getting to work remotely if you want to. I know you and your wife did a couple month stint driving around the country, working remotely, which I think is super cool. What would it take to get you to go back to work for someone else at this point?
Complete and utter financial ruin.
that all of your clients drop you tomorrow and you can't pick anything up for 12 months, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. Like I've seen the light, I guess. And, yeah, I mean, just seeing the possibility of what this could be, it's just too much. Like there's no way to turn my back on that now. You know, it's, at this point, we've had ups and downs. There's been things where it's, you know, been a real struggle to kind of stay positive about things and to, you know, hope that things get better. But it always does. And I've realized, you know, if I kind of keep focused on, you know, like we said, you know, building the life that I want. And I mean, the values that I kind of defined for the company in the early days have been things that I realized that if I just stick to those, you know, providing great service to clients, you know, making sure that I'm only bringing work to the team that they can be proud to do, stuff like that. As long as I've been keeping those in sight, like, things always have gotten better. Of course, you know, more veteran business owners may think that's a naive statement to make, but it's been 18 months. And so until I'm disproven, I'll kind of keep that top of mind, and that'll be my guiding light.
Totally. And as entrepreneurs, we have to have that sometimes just different view of the world. We have to have slightly like rose-tinted glasses and, you know, be optimists and believe that, you know, things are going to be good. And I think that's kind of what, you know, keeps us hopeful and keeps driving us forward, which is super cool to have, even if things don't, you know, quite come out. Everything takes, you know, twice as long as you think it's going to in life. But, you know, the hope that we can make it better keeps driving us forward, which is great. So Mike, what's next for Upbuild? What are your world domination plans for, you've been in business for 18 months. When you hit 36 months, what do you want to have happened?
Yeah, that's great. A great question. Very timely, because we actually just brought the whole team out to Portland, Oregon last week on Thursday. We had a team day and just kind of, we got an Airbnb and spent the whole day in it, just talking about the business, talking about client strategy, and then just going out to grab lunch and cocktails and stuff like that. And so in my company presentation, one of my kind of closing slides was essentially throwing out all of our goals. Because the statement I made in our deck for our company presentation was that I think goals are bullshit. But what I mean by that is revenue and size goals specifically, I think for our application at Upbuild, are bullshit. Because really my goal as a CEO, and I've kind of distilled this down over these past 18 months, is like, this is why I am here at Upbuild. It's to ensure that the best technical marketers in the world are going to have a place to be able to sustainably do what they love under fair terms for clients that they are proud to work with. And so really my goal is to maintain our profitability, making sure, you know, we're at 10, 15% profitability after everything is said and done, and make sure that I'm continuing to only bring great work to our team and support the team in doing that great work. So those are my goals. That's what I hold myself accountable to. And if I don't do those, then I should kind of hold myself accountable. But otherwise, there's nothing that I'm really shooting for to say like, hey, I want to make, you know, we should bringing in $1 million by X date, or we want to have a team of 20 by, you know, 2017, 2018. It's just kind of going along, and growth happens when growth happens, trying to be as intentional as possible about it and about the choices we make that are going to create a kind of more cash intensive organization that require more clients, making sure that we do kind of everything in a healthy balance and kind of putting that first and foremost.
I love it. And you turned my question around on me. You went back to the losers have goals, winners have systems. You have a system for building this. You don't have, you know, a goal for certain number of clients or certain number of employees or something like that. So sounds like you're on the right path. Mike, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a fantastic conversation. I look forward to catching up in a couple weeks in person up in Portland and Seattle during MozCon. So thank you for joining us, and I'm rooting for you guys. Keep going strong, and as always, Credo and myself, we're here to help you.
Thanks so much, John. Thanks for having me. It was a real pleasure.